Welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name's Phil Topham, Executive Director of the FIEC. The band is back together, brothers. You've done the last couple in my absence.
Thank you very much
for filling in. I don't think it's quite as big a deal as that, but it's nice to be back. So with me for our regular dive into the news is John Stevens, our National Director. Hello, John.
Hello, Phil.
And Adrian Reynolds, our Associate National Director.
Hello.
Adrian. Good to- Adrian, wearing an Arsenal top. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I'm trying to overcome disappointment. I thought this is a podcast all about dealing with disappointment. Is that not this episode?
No, it's not quite.
Okay.
You might think that as we go through it. Excellent. It's good to see you both and good to be together again. Tell me a little bit about what we've been doing in recent times. So our local conferences are still going on. There's a few this week, in fact, isn't there, John? I think you're going to Reading.
Yeah, I'm going to Reading on Thursday. I think we're in Gloucester tomorrow. I think you're in North Wales on Friday.
Yeah, up in Mould on Friday.
So yeah, we've had about 33 this year, and this is a real opportunity to gather together leaders. Locally, we're thinking about sort of issues in the life of the church and how to manage diversity. So it's hugely important. Mm. To local church life. Yes, they've been hugely helpful. And I think people really appreciate the opportunity both to meet together, encourage one another, but also to think through a very important issue in their churches as to how to span differences of ethnicity, differences of gender, differences of age, and produce the kind of church that's meant to be united in Christ.
Different football teams.
Yeah, all of that kind of thing. How you bring
all
that together.
Is it coming to every story? Yeah, I think it probably does.
My dull agent, I am sorry they lost on penalties. It is a great shame. Leaders' Conference bookings are open as well, which is great.
They are, yeah. And in fact, I've just come off a call with one of the people who's leading two of our seminars, really excited about the way the Leaders' Conference is coming together. Such an important topic. You might think it's a conference on prayer. It's not really. I mean, we are calling it Pour Out Your Hearts, but prayer is always a function of our walk with the Lord and how closely we're walking with him. And what we long for as leaders is to be walking closely with the Lord ourselves and having a, you know, vibrant, real life of devotion to him, but also for our churches to do the same. And I think sometimes we tie ourselves in knots, Phil, trying to think, you know, why don't people pray in church? How can I get more people praying? It's not quite the right question to be asking. The right question to be asking is, how do I encourage people in their walk with the Lord to walk more closely with him, both as individuals and as a church together? And I firmly believe, and this is what we're going to be exploring at the Leaders' Conference, that if we're able to do that, then the life of prayer flows out of that.
Yeah, in thankfulness and in rejoicing.
So we'll be talking about prayer, but in the context of this wider setting. And of course, that's what we all need. We all need a closer walk. You know, the old hymn says, "Oh, for a closer walk with thee." And we could have called the conference that, really. That's what we're longing for in ourselves and in others. There's also an after event, which this year we're including in the ticket price. If you want to come, there's a kind of a ticket price that includes the extra 24 hours. We're having that with Aubrey Sequeira. Aubrey is a pastor from Abu Dhabi, trained under Mark Dever. He's had a long, long ministry in Abu Dhabi, in a Abu Dhabi church out there. He's an Indian national. He used to be in a rock band, in fact, an Indian
really?
Boy. He was converted, yes. So, John, you'll be able to gig with him probably at the conference. And he's coming to do the after event, which is more specifically about what are some of the practical things you can do to encourage the church in prayer. It flows out of the rest of the conference. Mm. So if you can make it, I'd really encourage you to stay on. We've got 100 places there for the extra add-on event.
Amazing.
Come and join us for that.
Yeah, that's at Blackpool Tabernacle, isn't it? So that'll be on the 12th, and the conference is 9th to the 11th of November, isn't it?
You got it.
Excellent. John, you're in North Wales next week. I'm in North Wales on Friday for our local conference. Yep. You're in North Wales next week at the Bala Ministers Conference.
I'm delighted to speak at the Bala Ministers Conference. I'm talking on the whole issue of nationalism and identity, which I think is a really big issue at the moment, certainly for Christians to think through what does the Bible teach? Where do we find our identity? How does that connect with our ethnicity, our language, the culture, the place in which we find ourselves? So just thinking through some of those issues from a biblical perspective.
Excellent. I'm also at a conference called Identity next week.
Okay.
Bizarrely. So I'm going to the BCUK conference.
Oh, great.
Next
week
with my wife. It's like a hot date, Phil. And yes, a few of us are going. Graham Bynan is speaking.
He is.
And a few other people are speaking too. The BCUK conference has become really important in lots of people's ministry lives. BCUK have been a great help to many church leaders, just helping them think how they apply the Bible to many different situations. So if you're one of the many who are there, look forward to seeing you.
And Saturday, something I haven't done before. I've been invited to go to the kind of the All Souls Orchestra Prom Praise at the Albert Hall.
What instrument? And I don't tell us. I'd like to just send in your answers on a postcard.
What
instrument should John be playing?
The kazoo. But that's just a great opportunity. I don't know what that's going to be like. I hope it's going to be really uplifting and encouraging, but I'm delighted to have the opportunity to be able to go and be there.
Enjoy. Enjoy. Just while we're talking about FIEC news, I've just come off a call talking to somebody about Rising Lights 2027. So the planning is underway for Rising Lights 2027. At the moment, it's a kind of hold the dates piece, I think. So 29th of March to the 2nd of April 2027 in Torquay. Yep, save the dates. Get your accommodation booked. Bookings will open some point over the summer. We're just working out what that's going to look like.
We're excited we're hoping we're going to be able to expand the number of kids places we had. So many families came last time. We were absolutely packed out on kids. But we are going to be able to increase the number of kids. But if you're wanting to come with kids and families, you need to be ready to kind of book quite quickly, I think, because there'll probably be kind of lots of people who want to come with kids. But we are trying to expand that. Got a number of our speakers in place. So Jason Roach is going to be preaching our main Bible readings. Adrian, who else is coming? Who's confirmed?
I'm not sure I want to tell you.
Oh, do you not?
I'm sort of keeping it secret.
Oh,
really.
Okay.
Yeah. We've got, do you really want to know?
Well, I'll say there's some names. They're in the brochure for last year.
We have some guys from Tyndale House who are coming to run some stuff for us. We have Nathan Weston from Crosslands who's going to do some material for us. We also have Helen Thorne Allenson from BCUK who's going to do some stuff on being a caring church. And we've got a Bible overview provided by Proc Trust next year.
Lizzie Smallwood, I think, is on.
Lizzie Smallwood
is
also coming to do a track on evangelism.
Very good. Well, we're looking
forward
to that.
And the list goes on.
It does. Yeah. Save the dates. 3 weeks today, Adrian and I will be travelling back from Torquay. We're doing a site visit, looking at some of these venues, how we can do some of this expansion. So we're really looking forward to that. Let's talk about some of the headlines that have been making the news in this last couple of weeks, brothers. And I want to start in Scotland. So extraordinary images today of Peter Morrell. We're recording this on Tuesday. Peter Morrell, who was the chief executive of the Scottish National Party, married to party leader at the time, Nicola Sturgeon. He has admitted embezzling £400,000 of party funds on kind of a lavish lifestyle, really, buying all sorts of luxury goods, even a motorhome, which was very sort of infamous, wasn't it, a couple of years ago when all this began to break. It's fascinating because he has admitted doing this. Nicola Sturgeon says she knew nothing about it. And there were all sorts of leadership lessons here, I think, about where the buck stops when you're the leader of a political party, or we could say the leader of a church. And there's all sorts of governance issues I'd like to explore as well. But this does seem extraordinary, doesn't it, that this could happen and only one person knew about it, that person being Peter Morrell.
I mean, it does initially seem extraordinary, although the police have investigated this and they've come to the conclusion that they haven't charged anybody else. So it's worth remembering that this was money that was stolen over a period of years, not necessarily in large sums at the same time. I think, as Nicola Sturgeon has said, both of them had relatively large incomes. So some of the things that were being bought, actually, people with those levels of incomes would have been able to buy for one another.
Agreed.
So at one level, you might think, how could somebody not know? But if somebody is engaged in dishonesty and embezzling, then I think somebody who is adept at stealing in that way is also going to be adept at hiding aspects of their lives. And I think very often when we hear that one partner in a married couple has misbehaved in some way, we can immediately assume the other person must have known. Now, some circumstances that will be true. There might be things that they did see, or they might have shut their eyes to the obvious. But sometimes clever deceivers behave in ways in which actually you don't notice what they're doing until it's fully exposed. So I think not knowing all of the circumstances, I think we've got to be careful before we apportion blame to somebody, unless there were obvious things that they should have noticed, they did notice.
But I think the question I'm more asking is it a tenable position when you're leading the political party and you're married to the perpetrator?
I think it rather depends what you mean by leading the party. So Nicola Sturgeon was the political leader, but the party had a structure which was a bit more complicated than that. It wasn't entirely her hierarchy. So her husband was a chief executive officer. So he was running the machinery, if you like, of it. He was the boss, in fact, in terms of the way that the money was allocated and all those kinds of things. He was actually the boss. It wasn't her. So it's slightly more complicated than just saying, you know, she was the leader of the party and she should have known. I think personally there's an element of that. I mean, she stood up and she accepted responsibility when she was asked about, you know, where some of the donations gone. She said, no, they're all accounted for. It's all dealt with. So she stood up and made statements like that. And I think in that sense, she does bear some responsibility for that. But the way the party was actually structured was that she didn't actually bear responsibility for those things. So I think you probably could say she should have been more curious and she should have investigated more, or or asked more penetrating questions when these subjects came up, as they must have done at sort of board meetings and things like that. But actually, the structure was done in such a way that actually she didn't bear responsibility for them. And which again is a lesson. Your structures have got to be fit for purpose. And if you are going to have someone who's a leader and who is accountable, then they need to be accountable for everything, not just accountable for some things.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I mean, if somebody's salary starts with a 9 and you buy a brand new coffee machine, well, that's not that unusual, I suppose, is it?
No, and I think I was just trying to say we shouldn't jump to the conclusions that where one party to a marriage has misbehaved, the other is in some sense automatically culpable. Yeah. We've got to be very careful to avoid that. I think there are issues here that raise questions. So I think the very fact that Nicola Sturgeon talked about fully cooperating with the police, and then it turns out that in her interview, no comment was her answer to every question for hours. So she's not engaged in giving answers to questions that she was clearly being asked. That's her legal right to do that. Mm. Does it just raise a question of why did you respond in that way rather than providing fulsome official, although she would say she wrote written answers to the questions. There's been some allegations within the SNP itself that she prevented more active investigation into the accounts.
Well, she denies that as well.
Questions. Yeah. But people have said that there was a sort of a lack of scrutiny, a lack of transparency. I think there are always difficulties if you have a married couple who are together running an organization in its most important positions. That just raises questions of conflict of interest. And we see that in church life. If a pastor and a pastor's wife are the absolutely dominant people, then that can raise all sorts of potential for things not being able to be done with an appropriate and proper scrutiny. So I think there are those questions to be asked. And of course, the biggest question is, in any organization, there ought to be proper scrutiny of the finances, proper to auditing, the ability to ask questions. That's exactly why we have procedures and processes to do that, which ought to pick up on some of those problems. Now, no system is perfect, but I think that the question here is whether or not the SNP was actually applying the sorts of processes that really were needed to ensure that money was properly being applied.
There are governance questions here, aren't there, Adrian, which I think are lessons we can take for church life. So Peter Morrell was in charge of signing off expenses. So he was able, it seems, to put together all sorts of vague claims to enable his embezzlement to take place, and he's admitted to that. We've got to be very careful, haven't we, if we're in that position in any organisation, that we don't get tempted to do the same kind of thing.
Yes, and we've talked about this before. I think it's important that we're not just white, but seen to be white. I think the processes are a protection to others, or a protection for others, and a protection for ourselves. They work both ways. So they give comfort to other people that things are being done in a decent and orderly way. And they also protect us from our own sinful natures and what we might be tempted or otherwise to do. So I think that's perfectly reasonable. I think one of the other interesting things that's come out of this is there's been I don't know what you make of this, Phil, a little bit of deflection on the part of Nicola Sturgeon. She recorded an interview with Laura Koonsberg on Saturday night, which was broadcast on Sunday, which has turned out to be quite controversial, where she obviously was quite tearful and she denied any knowledge. And she said just because she was married to Peter Morrell, it shouldn't mean that she's included in it. And then she said, that's just an example of the misogyny that people have had to face, women have had to face. And she may be right in that. There may be something in that. Mm. But it just reminded me, I wouldn't want to say this myself, but I'm glad someone else has said it in a way. Kathleen Stock, I don't know if you remember her. She was the lesbian professor from Brighton University who was sacked because of her gender critical views. And she was writing in the Times this week saying, actually, that's just too easy a defense. And there are some easy defenses that are go-to defenses. You just want to try and deflect any criticism or deflect any, closer look and closer scrutiny. You can just go to them straight away and they're almost impossible to answer. And Kathleen Stock was arguing, and I think she's got something to say here, that actually that's just too easy an answer. There are questions to be answered. Mm. And we've got to be careful that when we are accused, perhaps too strong a word, but when there are questions raised about some of our leadership, we don't just deflect. The easiest thing to do would say, well, you have to submit to the elders. You know, there'd be very sort of easy catch-all deflections that we could just throw out there that would just close down any debate, when actually some things do need to be looked into and we do need to answer and be accountable. We need to make sure those avenues are open.
A couple of things. I mean, so we've just been in an FIAC trust board meeting, which is the way that we as the staff are held accountable. We have lots of procedures in place to ensure that we properly account for the money that we receive and the way that it's used. And I think all of those governance systems, whether in a slightly bigger organization like the FIAC or just in a local church, are hugely important for providing that protection. So we have a whole series of protocols of financial controls, who can approve expenditure or expenses. You don't approve your own. It requires other staff to oversee that. Obviously, the trust board itself, every meeting is analyzing the accounts, getting a report on the current financial situation and whether we've kept to the budget that's been set or whether we haven't. We have a treasurer who's not part of the trust board who operates as a form of internal scrutiny of that on behalf of the board. And then ultimately, we have a sort of auditors. We were just receiving our audit report, who will have looked through the accounts in detail and ask the difficult and hard questions. And we also have important kind of conflict of interest policies that mean that people have to disclose when there's a conflict of interest. There are then decisions that they can't be involved in. And all of those are mechanisms that are designed to try to make sure that misuse of position and power and resources, it can't take place. It can never be absolutely perfect, but those are just very sensible provisions, and they take time and thought to put in place. But I think they are absolutely crucially what governance is all about. And for our churches, Becky Thomas, our church governance advisor, we want to help churches to be able to put in place the right and proper processes. Just something else to refer, one of the questions I have, Peter Morrell has embezzled this money. You're left asking the question, why? And I think it says something about the nature of the human heart and the fallen human heart. You kind of think, here was somebody who was paid really well, who was in this very senior position. And some of the things that were embezzled just seem small, petty, and unnecessary. A pencil sharpener.
You know, it did cost £129
a pencil sharpener. But you just think, why would somebody who is in that position misuse their trust? At what point did their conscience become so corrupt that they were willing to do that? And is it because they could? Did they get a thrill out of it? I guess we might not know, but it is just a reminder to us of the sort of the fallenness and the seat of the human heart that we all have to fight against. And actually, tragically, in Christian ministry, misuse of money has been historically one of the major temptations that leaders face, and we've got to guard against that.
Didn't spend it on an Arsenal season ticket, did he? I told you I'd get football into everything.
You did. We will put a link in the show notes to the governance pages on our website. All the stuff that Becky Thomas does to help churches think this through wisely. Do be in touch with us if you're in a local church that could use some help on thinking about governance and your strategies. And Becky will be delighted
to
help you
with that.
Absolutely. And you can also sign up for Becky's fully operational email as well, which just helps you to keep up to date with things that are happening in the area of governance that you need to know in the local church. Let's stay with politics. I don't want it to be too politically heavy, but interestingly, Lord Mandelson is back in the headlines this week. So more of the files released relating to the time when he was appointed ambassador to the USA. We've talked before about his links to the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein and all the fallout of that. But Adrian, you were picking up this week, there's something different that we're seeing in the messages.
I think we are seeing something new. So 1,200 pages of notes, huge number of WhatsApp messages. I mean, in fact, one of the newspapers this morning was saying that basically this is government. Government is by WhatsApp, which is nothing new. It's not a Labour thing. That was happening in the previous government as well. That actually the business of government is being done over, basically over mobile phones and over messages. I think the thing that interested me about this, Phil, is that Mandelson has long been known as a kind of networker, wheeler, dealer. You know, he sort of works all the angles and manages all the relationships. And clearly, from before he was ambassador and continuing on while he was ambassador, so while he was not actually a member of Her Majesty's government, representing Her Majesty's government, he was doing all this wheeler dealing. He was operating behind the scenes. He was sending messages to friends and enemies alike and just trying to influence and say what he thought and get his little piece in. So it was repeated maybe at cabinet or, you know, just fishing for information that was going on. And the thing that struck me about it, thinking about church leadership is how easy it is for some people and how desirable it is for some people to manage things from the back seat. And when actually you're not part of a leadership structure, but you like to have an influence, you like to be heard. And of course, in a congregational setting, people do need to be heard, but there are ways and means for that to be done and mechanisms for that to operate in. And I think what you've got in Mandelson, it seems to me, from what I haven't read all the pages, but I've had a little look at some of them, from what's been revealed, is someone who's basically an interfering busybody. He wants to be in charge and he's not. And he's trying to influence people as a result. And I think you do see that in church life. You sometimes see that with people who are big givers. They think actually that gives them a right to influence decisions. You sometimes see it from people who have been leaders for a long time, former leaders, stepped down and have found that very difficult to give up. You sometimes get it from people who are, you know, sometimes gossips or just sometimes want to be in on the inside and they're on the outside. So I think it's very hard in church life. We do have leadership structures, and every church will have slightly different structures, I guess. We do have leadership structures. They're there for a reason. And I think we've got to be careful to guard against their integrity. By which I mean that actually the right people are making the right decisions. I was once invited to a leaders meeting, an elders meeting, and it was the elders and their wives. That was nice. So I was invited to give a presentation. I gave a presentation and I said to someone afterwards, I just thought it was going to be the elders. That doesn't matter. I don't mind talking to the wives. Well, that was a real privilege and joy and hope it was useful. And he said, well, the elders' wives come to all the elders' meetings. They help us make the decisions. And I was just a little bit taken aback by that. And I thought, well, that's fine. If that's going to be your leadership structure, that's fine and that's okay. But you need to have integrity. So you're voting for three of your leaders in this case and not for three of the others. So I think we do need to know what our structures are, and then we need to honour them, and we need to help our people honour them as well.
John? Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, Peter Mandelson has had a massive influence in the Labour Party. He's had an agenda that he's sought to pursue, and he's developed a group of disciples who basically look to him, who he advises, who he encourages in their positions. So you can see that people like Wes Streeting is seen as being someone who Mandelson has influenced, although he wasn't always positive in his views towards Wes Streeting.
Quite the opposite.
Pat McFadden. And basically what's clearly going on is there is a group of people who are primarily being influenced by Peter Mandelson, taking his advice and doing his bidding, and in some sense actually undermining the Prime Minister and his leadership. It's here is somebody behind the scenes who's manipulating, shaping, trying to bring about certain results within government by having a group of people who are following him, who he advances their careers, and then they do what he wants. And I think that hidden secret behind the scenes influence of who do people really follow, who are they being influenced by, that can easily happen in church life. It can happen at a local church level, but it can also actually happen in the church more widely. So pastors might have a particular mentor, somebody that they look up to, or somebody who's influenced them in their ministry, who's helped get them their job, and they look to that person to get advice, to be told what to do. And actually that can become quite unhealthy if they become dependent. And actually for somebody who's at the center of that web, they can misuse their power quite significantly. And some of the abuse scandals have involved situations like that. So Jonathan Fletcher within the Anglican Church, he had a huge influence over a generation of kind of ministers who were younger, who he'd influenced, who he continued to influence, for whom he opened up jobs and opportunities and prevented others from getting some of those jobs and opportunities. And that's just one example of sort of the kind of modus operandi of the way that Peter Mandelson operates, working into a Christian context. And we need to be on guard against that. And I think sometimes it can even be an influence which isn't necessarily personal. It's who you listen to, whose advice you take. So Carl Truman, interestingly, was kind of very concerned a few years ago about Big Eva, the power of conference speakers who kind of lots of people would follow. He's now been warning against the danger of what he's called Gig Eva, which is basically online evangelical influencers who are unaccountable to anybody in the church, but yet actually they get followings of people who basically listen to what they say and do what sort of they're encouraging them to do. And that kind of influence that people can have over others can be very distorting.
I think there's a more subtle form of that as well, John, because there is an inadvertent influence that you can exercise, which I think you need to be aware of. I'm thinking especially of situations where you've been in leadership and you've stepped down, especially because you've retired. or because perhaps you've been reasonably successful leader, church has grown under your ministry, you may find people hanging on your words or looking to you for advice and letting you have the last word on things, even when actually that's not your role. Mm. And I think it's one of the reasons that often leaders can find it hard to retire, because they not only give up a salary and regular preaching, but they also give up the power, and the right kind of power that comes with positions of authority. So I think we do need to be able to give up these things as well at certain stages and times in our lives, when we move from place to place, when we change roles, all those sorts of things, and especially when we retire. Leaders need to be aware that they continue to have an influence, even perhaps, this is not necessarily going out and seeking something bad for yourself. Yeah. It can happen to you anyway, just because of longevity or experience.
And that's we need to recognise, actually, I think, we have a measure of influence working with FIEC and the opportunity we have to speak into a whole variety of situations. We need to guard ourselves against misusing that power. So personally, quite happy to express my views on quite a lot of things, answer questions that people have. I haven't wanted to build a group of disciples who are people who I'm strongly influencing and directing.
So those 100 people just over there behind the camera
through the windows.
There is a sense in actually one has to be just aware of the danger of that and not wanting to build that kind of platform. You have to exercise a measure of self-restraint, I think. And there's a difference between helping people to think and thinking for people. And actually, that's just a really important thing to guard against.
Now, when I listened to the podcast from 2 weeks ago when we did in the news and I wasn't here,
did you miss Basque or Catalan?
I did. It was an excellent quiz, and I guessed the same as you, John, so I didn't get all three right when I was listening back to it. But I was devastated that you didn't talk about Spygate. So I'm going to correct that right now.
Well, hang on. Let's just...
No, it had happened. Southampton had been chucked out of the playoffs.
I'm going to confess my sins.
Go on.
John wanted to do Spygate. And I didn't.
Oh, well, we're doing it now. And
I've now been outvoted. Well, this is an example of plurality in action.
Yeah, that's
when you've only got two elders, and it was me that was chairing the meeting, I got to say what happened.
Who has the microphone.
Now there's three elders. I've been outvoted.
Yeah, there we are. We're going to do Spygate. First of all, it gives me an opportunity to talk about the playoffs. Bolton Wanderers back in the Championship. But more seriously, this was a fascinating story. Southampton were thrown out of the competition because they'd been spying on other clubs doing their training. What's come out this week...
Which is against the rules.
Absolutely. What's come out this week is the way that they did that. I think there are some fascinating lessons for church leaders, because it seems that the club asked very junior members of staff, some of them interns, to go and do the bidding of the club by spying on other teams that the club were going to be playing in their training sessions, which, as you say, is against the rules. And it's come out that those younger members of staff felt extremely uncomfortable being asked to do this, but felt they had no choice because the powers and the hierarchy in the club had told them that they had to do that. I think there's massive lessons for us there. A lot of our churches have interns. We need to be super careful, don't we, that we're not asking interns to do things that they are hugely uncomfortable with, or that we shouldn't be asking them to do.
Who's going to start? Do you want to start? Okay, you start, John. Oh, okay. No, after you. There's a question, by the way, about whether churches should have interns. I think if people, especially if they're unpaid, I think we need to think very carefully about that. And there are circumstances where that's right and proper, especially in gaining work experience, where churches are able to give people work experience. But if you're just getting labour for free, I'm personally quite uncomfortable with that. And I think that needs to be thought through more carefully than just a model that's worth having. Needs to be slightly more nuanced than that. So it's worth saying that. But yes, if there's a disparity between positions of responsibility and power and age and experience and the people who are doing the work, it's very often difficult for people to say no to things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we've got to be conscious of those differences. And they cash out in all kinds of different ways in church life. It's not just people who are interns and working for church life. It can be someone who's very senior, especially if you're ministering in a culture which is very deferential. Mm. People find it very difficult to say no to you, for example, and you need to have checks and balances. In a sense, some of that comes back to governance. So I think whenever there is a power disparity, we need to be aware of the consequences that could have and the way that that power could be either abused or mistakenly used, which I think is not quite the same category.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This is,
yeah.
I think, probably, you know, telling someone to go and do something even when they say they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's crossing a line. It's into abuse.
Well, I mean, in the Southampton case, they're asking interns to do something that's against the rules of the game, right, aren't they? Right. So that's absolutely wrong.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's the inverse of Peter Mandelson's situation. Peter Mandelson, with certain people who are benefiting by their association with him, he is opening up opportunities for them as his disciples. Here is the threat that if you don't do what I want, you will lose your position and you're very junior and you feel coerced simply by the insecurity of your position and the expectation that somebody else is imposing on you. So we've got to be absolutely on guard against those dangers of how power, particularly a significant difference of power, can be misused. And that's why it's, again, important why organizations have whistleblowing policies and the ability to go to somebody other than your boss to be able to raise concerns about what you're being asked to do. It can be quite hard to stand up to something that somebody is asking you to do, which you believe to be wrong, but they're insisting that you should do it, particularly if there's going to be a cost to you of doing that. So actually, whistleblowing policies are there to enable people to actually bring to the attention of others where they feel they're being asked to do things which are wrong, which are unlawful. And again, I think it's absolutely appropriate that we build in processes that enable people to be able to do that. And it's being aware of the dynamics and putting in place ways that those dynamics can be mitigated for the benefit, actually, ultimately, of the organization. Because in the end, this was a massive loss to Southampton.
Oh, huge. Ongoing.
Hundreds of millions of pounds loss, not able to go up into the Premiership.
Their fans are suing them, which is quite an extraordinary
thing. I felt so sorry for the Southampton fans because of the actions of the club. Mm. Imagine being the dad who has to tell your six-year-old, I'm not taking you to Wembley after all at the weekend.
I think football clubs are very hierarchical. Mm. In the way they operate. There's not much plurality, I don't think, that goes on in football clubs. And I don't know if we should read too much into this, but the football manager, who is so memorable, I've forgotten his name already.
Tunda.
Tunda, thank you. Yeah. There you go. Is 33, just 33. It's very young to be a football manager. And I don't know if there's something in that. I think there is some wisdom in years to be gained. And of course, you can't say this because, you know, people take, you know, George Graham took bungs in envelopes when he was in his 50s, so you can't read too much into it. But actually, there is some measure of protection by having maturity within your leadership. Elders are called elders for a reason, and they do have some experience behind them. And I think 33 probably is too young to be managing that kind of operation.
It's a big club.
The thing Adrian didn't let me talk about last time.
We're off script now, folks.
I was really struck by Southampton were disqualified for what objectively you might say was a relatively small breach of the rules compared to all that they had done to get to the point of being in the playoffs.
Allegedly.
You might say, if you looked at it purely objectively, it feels small. It would be easy for people to feel this is a massively disproportionate
someone with a mobile phone
for sort of, in a sense, the consequence of losing out on this hundreds of millions of pounds opportunity to go up to the Premiership. But actually, that is a reminder to us of the fact that God actually demands that we fully and completely obey him, that in a sense, we are called to fully obey what he demands. And it doesn't matter, in a sense, how far we fall short of his glory, how far we match up. Actually, the fact that we don't match up means that we are subject to disqualification and sort of eternal judgment. And I think it's just a reminder to us that actually falling short to any degree attracts the right and proper kind of judgment. And we mustn't look at it and think, this is tiny, it doesn't really matter. That's actually exactly the opposite from the way that God deals with us, and it's why we need salvation in Christ.
It pains me to say, but you might almost say you have to pay the penalty.
Adrian, we are so sorry that it didn't quite work out.
You basically need somebody else to take it for you.
We are not going to go there. Brothers, time is gone. Thank you so much for talking about all that's been going on in the news.
No football
next couple
time,
of weeks. Basically. Yeah, we will leave that out.
It's the World Cup next time.
I don't know about that. Very little interest in the World Cup. Thank you so much for talking about all that's been happening in the news. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please rate, leave a review so others can find it, and we'll talk to you again very soon. God bless.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you.